Welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Dan Fernandez, and we have a very special This Week on Channel 9. We have Brian Keller over there. Look at him. Yeah, yeah, wonderful. He's going to be doing, we're doing a drinking game with special guests. So, Sven, and how do you pronounce your last name, Sven?
It's actually pronounced Groot. It's not English, so it's not an O sound, it's Groot.
I think I had a Groot in my throat.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's the first time you've heard that. On to our next guest. Yeah, see, this is our Dave Letterman setup.
Yeah, it's me again. It's Christian, little guru.
DiCaprio.
Everybody already knows him, so.
Yeah.
And back to our drinking, and why Brian's on the board is we have four American beers here. And, well, actually, one Australian. Foster's, Bud Light.
Foster's, Old English, Bud Light, and Mickey's.
And that's Old English 800.
So during the show, you guys are going to be drinking and letting us know which beer you think is which during our blind taste test.
So I think it's time to do our first beer here.
Okay.
And
cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Yeah, that's pretty bad. Yeah.
Yeah, it has its beer taste.
So, what do we think? What have we got here?
Oh, we got to guess right now? Can we guess at the end?
I think you should guess right now.
Yeah. I think I need to guess at the end.
Okay, we'll guess at the end then.
Sorry.
Okay. Back to you.
Awesome. All right, I'm going to keep my cup because this was so good.
Oh.
When it hits my lips. And Sven, can we talk about this picture?
I'd rather not, actually.
So what's going on here? Is this this is not Photoshopped, by the way.
No, this is not Photoshopped. This is 100% real me when I'm drunk.
Which is why we had to bring alcohol.
Exactly. This was at a party a few days ago in Japan. It was a birthday party, and, well, there was a couple of pretty girls who wanted me to pose with the whatever you call that, and the flower in my hair, so I'm not going to say no to a bunch of pretty girls.
Very nice. And now it's on the internet. Very nice.
Cheers.
Cheers to us, really. Yeah. I can't wait to see what Jamie's going to do with this piece of artwork.
If he does anything, I'll come over to Canada and kill him.
And I can't wait until we do these live.
Next is this week, actually, the first preview of the Office web apps got launched.
Yeah, this just launched today.
Yeah, it's a limited preview, so you need to sign in really fast or sign up really fast to get into the game. The thing here is that you can now go to the website and edit Word documents, Excel documents, and what have you in Office directly through the website.
And one of the cool things you were talking about
was that's the button there.
Yes. So walk me through this.
Like if you're editing the file in the browser and you find, well, some features, you know, the full blown board has these crazy features and one is missing, then there's a button in the top right that exactly opens Word for you, or the application that we were in, in the web mode, the full application, and you can continue there with your edits, which is kind of nice. It's a seamless experience. And I think it's well done. It's really integrated and everything.
And they're also doing this for companies that are signing up with Microsoft Services Online. So if you're doing a hosting business using our hosted Exchange, hosted SharePoint, you get the Office web apps as well. So
is really sweet. Yeah.
I understand it's a combination of regular JavaScript stuff and Silverlight as well.
Yes, so we're not exactly sure what the shipping version is. So, and we haven't tried this, or at least I personally haven't tried it. So if you do get into the limited tech preview, let us know, because we certainly don't know.
Yeah, we're just making this up.
Yeah. Now, the other cool part was XNA Game Studio released, and Zune HD is obviously the big product that released, and the XNA GS 3.1 adds the Zune HD extension. So what this means is you can build a game using XNA and ship it directly with your Zune HD, and you no longer need a Creators Club subscription. And the other big thing is the new library, so supporting things that are unique to Zune HD. So touch and multi-touch are available as managed libraries.
And accelerators, right? You could read the sensors from the Zune.
Yeah.
And use them in your application. It's kind of nice, you know, if you move around, you could I'm moving forward. Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
And then
you could do
them. Everybody knows the real reason you get a mobile device is to play games on it.
So. Yeah, it's true, though. It's the number one app for iPhone App Store, so there you go. So more stuff to play with. The other thing, and this was on Scott Guthrie's blog, he had a couple of good posts this week, was the Microsoft Ajax CDN. So CDN is a content delivery network. What we're doing is actually hosting the ASP.NET Ajax files and jQuery available on the web, as well as the previews for the .NET 4.0 versions. Mm-hmm. So rather than you having to pay the bandwidth for every single request to download those JavaScript files if they haven't hit the cache or whatever, we will put those on the CDN, and that way it's the same exact files across different sites. We pay for the hosting costs for that. So.
And the interesting thing here is that actually the files are distributed all over the world, which means like if you're like in Australia, for example, one of the beers is Australian, right? If you're in Australia and your site sits in the US, it might be slow to get the data from there, like the JavaScript files. But with this network, you get like there's a node maybe in Australia or near a node, so that you actually hit that node and you get the files even faster. That's really good.
And the advantage is if you cache it on one site and you go to another site, which also uses this, it's still cached, so you can reuse the same file.
Exactly. You don't have to download it from a new domain because it's all coming from one. The other cool part is ASP.NET 4.0 has the ability to say in their script manager tag that you can actually say that within an attribute that say, I want to use the CDN version. So that's not out yet. It's ASP.NET 4.0. But cool stuff.
Cool stuff.
And is it time for our next beer?
It is time for our next beer.
So, yeah.
Da-da-da! Oh, geez. Stay on target.
Cheers, guys.
Oh, cheers. Cheers.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Salud.
Cheers.
Kanpai.
That one is better, but still.
I think I got my vote for this one.
Could I do a random guess or something?
Sure.
I would say the first one was Bud Light.
All right, we've got our first vote here.
All right, we can vote now.
But before I forget.
Anybody else want to throw down their votes?
I'm going to say Mickey's for B.
For B.
B, okay.
Now, Sven, you haven't actually had any of these beers, right?
No.
So you are completely random control set here.
Actually, I should vote first then, so I don't get influenced.
All right, sorry.
Okay, well, for A, I'm going to say, I'm going to agree that it's Bud Light with Christian.
Two votes for Bud Light.
And B, I'm going to say Old English.
All right. Shaping up to be pretty interesting.
This is completely random, so.
All right. So this is what's new in WCF. So you read this. What's the scoop here?
The cool thing here is with the new version of WCF, they're going to simplify the whole configuration mess, or, you know, jungle. I was like going to, like, I had to do some WCF services recently, and it is a lot of XML that you actually need to take care of. And it would be nice if they had some smart defaults. And I think, like, with the new version, from what I read, they are putting some smart defaults in, which means now they're setting some settings that most users would love, like, and then you most likely stay with these settings. And for that, the XML is now really short. Mm-hmm. If you want to change stuff, you still could, right? You could. The power is still there. Everything is there. It's not that they take away stuff, right? It's only that they change into the default, which is kind of nice, so.
Cool. And this is a multi-part article. So this is the first part was on just the configuration changes, but they're going to be doing more stuff, programmability changes, et cetera.
They're going to go through all the new feature sets, like so that you get like the full view of everything that's new, and you can actually see what's changed, right?
Yeah, it's very nice that you can get more easily into WCF. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I'm still stuck on .NET remoting because I'm using Mono at the moment. But I have tried to look into WCF, and it's just this enormous, overwhelming amount of information that you need to digest before you can get started. So it would be nice if you can just have a click here and it works.
Yeah,
it is really powerful, though. It's really powerful. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Next, and this is an example that you had done some stuff with this before, but this is the C-sharp fact. But what's the scoop here?
Well, the idea here is that this is a new way in which you can create dynamic methods. Sometimes you're just doing something with reflection or something else dynamic, and it just doesn't have the performance you want. And to get rid of that, you can try and make a dynamic method, but up till now, the only way to do that would be to emit an immediate language, and that, okay, it's a step up from trying to generate code in a native environment, but it's still very...
Which is something you've had to do, right?
Yeah, I have done that, fortunately not on a very large scale, but if you just, then you're just writing binary machine language into an array and casting it to a function pointer and calling it, hoping that works.
I love my managed blanket, and yeah. I never want to leave it.
Never.
And of course, the IL generator on the dynamic method is much nicer, but if you've ever used it, you've probably had a situation that you've written 200 lines of code emitting an immediate language, and then you run the code and you get invalid method mm-hmm. back from the runtime, because somewhere you didn't pop a value from the stack and you end up with... with some values left on the stack at the end, and that the JIT compiler doesn't like that. And with this system here, you can build basically link expression trees. This was already in Visual Studio 2008 to some degree. It's been expanded a lot in Visual Studio 2010. And you can now declare things like conditional statements or loops and block statements using these really simple this really simple syntax. It's much higher level than just emitting yeah. IL. And much more readable as a result.
It's totally readable, like expression.loop, expression.if-then-else. Like it's very, it may be more verbose, so people may not like it from the verbosity in terms of, you know, it's going to take 50 lines to do, you know, 5 lines of code or something like that. But it's still much more readable and understandable than, say, IL.
And IL is also not very short if you if you want to write it manually.
Yeah.
And you need to comment that. If you're writing, if you're doing something with IL generator, then you need to add comments to show what you're doing, because nobody's going to figure it out just from looking at your code. And this is at least somewhat self-documenting.
Yeah, yeah.
It looks a little bit like the new XML extensions to link, kind of like X element and stuff. It looks really compact still. It's really powerful. And yeah, it's really cool. Nice stuff.
Very cool stuff. So this is the PDC event site. So Mike Swanson kind of did the where were we with Mix09 and some of the... So, yeah, was it Mix09? Yeah, Mix09. What is the feedback that we got for the site, and what are the things that we want to make sure that we do for PDC09? So there's a number of things. They took the Oxide engine for the event, the session browser, being able to search through authors, and he goes kind of the step-by-step in terms of the product planning involved in building the next version of the session site. So this is kind of cool, and I love sort of getting the behind the scenes, hey, here's what we were trying to do and some of the things that we're trying to achieve for this stuff. So
mm-hmm. It's really interesting to see actually that Oxide is used for that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so really interesting. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah. So now the next thing is contributing to open source. You want to talk about this?
Yeah, we could, like, there's so many like people who actually write code in open source, like they write they add some code, they add plugins, whatever, for in open source. But that's not the only thing how you could actually contribute to open source. You could also give some feedback or go to the community, like interact with people. If they have some questions, like answer them, help them out, give direct feedback to the people who write the open source software, like, I wanted to do that and didn't work, or like there's a bug there, you maybe haven't seen that, so you could like file a bug or something, like you could do in the CodePlex, right? It's
yeah.
there right now.
So since I work on a couple of open source projects, and like if I just wanted to hug somebody in the community, it would be that they would write documentation.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
There's the new,
that's a big thing on many open source projects. It's always lacking.
Yeah,
it's
like
always missing.
Give me the instructions for setup. Give me the instructions for, you know, the FAQ for workarounds, whatever. Like that is just golden, and a lot of people just kind of don't do it. CodePlex has the new ability to have writer permission, or maybe it's author permission.
Mm-hmm. Editor.
Editor permission.
Okay.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah! Old English, yeah!
Carry on.
Potion of the Gods is what we call that.
Really?
So, okay. Wait till you hit it, you'll be like, that's sweet nectar.
Oh, okay.
So anyways, stuff to look at and...
I think it's time for the next round, right?
Yeah, it probably is.
Yeah, it probably is.
All right, let's do this. Cheers.
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 Cheers to Brian.
Hey.
To Brian. Hey, there we go.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's a clear wow. Old English for me.
That's old English.
Okay. Well, I've already said Old English. I've got to pick something else. What else did we have?
Foster's Mickey's. Or Mickey's for you, Sven?
Okay, then I'm going to go with Mickey's.
All right.
There are
prizes. If these were Japanese beers or Dutch beers, then I would know them. But
there are prizes. Look, you have to learn your Old English. It's part of your Americanization.
Oh, okay.
Which isn't a word, but we're going to use it as a word. Oh, that's delicious.
It's good beer, yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the better ones.
PHP Toolkit for ADO.NET Data Services. So what this is you have your database, and then you use ADO.NET Data Services to provide REST services on top of that database. As a PHP developer, I don't want to be able have to do calls into REST and do XML parsing. So
exactly.
What this does is build proxy classes in PHP that allow you to call that database. So it just makes it really easy to be able to use databases and dynamically building databases, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, so it actually creates classes for you which like map exactly the items in the atom feed.
So customers.insert.
Exactly, and then you get also like the customers back. Like if you do like get me all customers with a certain last name, you could say that in REST, right? Then you get like a set of customers back, and what you get here is like instead of the plain XML atom feed, you get back a nice little object or set of objects, which is kind of cool.
For PHP developers, this is pretty sweet.
Yes,
so,
indeed.
If you work in PHP, you'll like that.
Then we've got to ask you, why are you not using ASP.NET? Anyway.
Yes. So this is the Windows 7 log-on background changer. Were you going to talk about this?
Yeah, I think I was going to do this. Some of you may have read that in Windows 7, it's now a lot easier to change the background of the login screen. You no longer need to hack system files and change resources. I don't remember exactly. It was either changing a registry key or just dropping a file in a certain directory or something like that.
It might have been dropping a file, because I know it wasn't like changing settings, I think, was the notes, but go on.
Yeah, okay, so drop a file in a certain directory. And now Paul Furt, I don't really know how his name is pronounced, but anyway, he has released an application which sort of does that for you. You can easily choose your pictures and change the logon background and see a nice little preview as well, what it's going to look like. And another nice thing about this application is it's actually written in WPF.
Yeah. Yeah, so
it's a great showcase for WPF, right?
I'm going to use this app. I love the ability. Now, I'm not sure if it has this ability, but I want it to do dynamic, right? So it just like updates on a specific interval to just write out a file.
Yeah, that would be awesome, actually.
Yeah, if nothing else, we can always
you could actually synchronize it with your background.
Yeah,
how
we
nice
could do like a
be?
Reflector thing, get into the code, or I don't know if it's open source or not. I didn't see the link. I only saw the download link. But
it would be awesome. Mm.
Yeah, somebody's project to work on.
So this is like something we all enjoy.
Yeah, we all love this.
We're like little girls. So this is system.io improvements in .NET 4.0. So I guess it kind of level set. Two ways to access data, or I'm sure there's multiple ways. One, you had the text reader, and you're working with streams and doing a bunch of things for streams, using disposable. Or the easy mode, which was to say file.readAllLines. And then but the problem is it would return a big string. So if you're reading 2 megabytes, you have to wait until that entire 2 megs is read into that string and then returned to you. What really you want to do is to be able to go line by line. So what they've done in .NET 4.0 is added some overloads that actually return an ienumerable of strings. So you just need to read the first 2 lines from that 2 megabyte text file. You don't have to load the entire thing into memory.
Yeah, so this is lazily evaluated.
Yes. Yes, exactly right.
It might be that you just want to go, like, you want to read a file until you hit a certain, I don't know, code or whatever, right?
Sure.
Some sort of statement, and then you don't want to read anymore. First, if you had, like, a 200 megabyte file, you had to read all the thing, you had to wait, it went into memory. Like, if you were running out of memory, stuff was paged out, it was slow, kind of, right? But still, you only needed, like, 200 kilobytes.
Yeah.
Right? And now with that, you like just say open, like you get enumerated, read until you hit your 100 or 200 kilobytes, and then you're done. You close it, right? And what you use
before you would have had to use the text reader or stream reader or something
which is not so
to do that, which is not as convenient.
Yeah, it's not as, it's possible, but it's not as nice as just having like a static class, static method with just a return type.
Once you saw like read all lines, you don't want to go back.
And this is not just for the file object, but also the directory and file info stuff.
So. That's really interesting because like I had some applications where I had to read like all files of a directory, and once you start to read like for example all files in system32 directory of Windows, that takes a while. So if you could like read just like file by file, it would be enough, and that's really interesting. It's so perfect.
Cool. Next is Dario Bisanjo had a great post on building scalable databases, and basically he goes through some real world examples of Dig.com and FriendFeed on how they had their normalized database and they denormalized the database to be able to do scale. So they walk through, you know, a scenario where it's a join on Dig users, which is millions, and then the number of digs, which is multiple millions, and trying to do that in a faster, responsive way is, you know, not possible. So denormalized data, it means more data everywhere, and sort of the NoSQL movement, if you will, and some of the real examples of building scalable databases. So kind of an interesting article.
So if you can avoid doing joins, then in the end that just means that one less block you need to read from disk, one less seek you need to do at some point. And when you have the kind of the numbers of users that, you know, these kinds of databases will need to serve, that's just something that you need to do. Yeah. Normalization looks nice on paper and you get taught it in university classes, but in the real world things don't always work that way.
Yeah, Duncan had some real world examples on Channel 9 where they had a normalized database and it was joining 7 tables to be able to do like the most common scenarios, and they had to denormalize it, like calling 7 tables, like, yes, it's perfectly to, you know, Boyce-Codd normal form, which is like fifth normal form or something, but like totally unnecessary in terms of what they were actually trying to achieve, so.
Mm-hmm. It's cool to see like guidelines on that, because like usually you don't know, you know, what could I, you know, what's, why would I put that in, and you know, what's the reason and stuff like that, so if you had some guidelines sometimes that helps, right?
Yeah.
And of course, always the most important guideline with performance optimization, measure it.
Yeah.
Don't assume that what the bottleneck in your code is.
No premature optimization.
Exactly.
Kelly, you know all about that.
Moving right along.
Another post by Scott Guthrie was auto-starting ASP.NET apps, and this is another example where Channel 9, maybe some people have seen this, where the page, you know, times out or whatever, your application needs to warm up, meaning it needs to compile, that page needs to JIT, a number of things need to get loaded into memory, maybe database caches need to be filled, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. ASP.NET 4.0 has two attributes, one for the application pool and another for the site that allows you to be able to save that information. So this is pretty cool and a really big feature. I know so many sites that
actually scripted, right?
Basically do this manually, which is to script it out and say, we need to hit this. Or it's like that person who's the release manager has to do that manually.
So the idea here is that they like pre-JIT it somehow, right? They run through all this stuff for you instead of you running through it, and they make sure it's like everything in memory.
This way the first guy who hits your site doesn't get that performance hit.
Yellow screen of death or whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's excellent.
Yeah, I love this feature.
So
picks of the week. I think before we get into our picks, we should do our
final beer.
I actually want to change my vote for Old English to be Bud Light. Bud Light is what I'm going to go there.
Is that your final answer?
Cheers, guys. Cheers, Niners.
If you get it wrong, you drop back to $1,000.
Yeah.
I think this one is Foster's.
This one's OE.
No, I'm going to say Foster's because that's the only one I have left. And I don't know anyway.
And I don't know what I have. I should...
So that means, Dan, you are...
Foster's
for A.
Now you're going to give us the results now, or do we have to wait and do our picks? Ooh, wait.
I will tabulate it while you do your picks.
Little guru.
We'll come back to you.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you. So you have the first pick of the week, sir.
Yeah. My pick of the week is SQL Azure Migration Wizard. And I picked that because, well, I work in SQL Azure one way.
It did release this week.
Yeah, It's awesome.
So therefore it is a relevant story.
And if you guys, for example, are if you're guys signed up in the CTP of SQL Azure, you might find this really interesting, because this wizard actually allows you to take the scheme of your current database that you have like in SQL Server on your local machine or server, and just create a script out of that and put it in SQL Azure. That's really interesting, and it's really just one click or a few clicks. You select the tables that you want and the schemas, and you're done. And other than that, then you migrate your data, and then you change your connection string in your application, and you should be set for like running the application with SQL Azure. So because most people actually think that SQL Azure is something different, kind of like it's a different database, so you can't, like, it's a hard way, it's a hard time to port stuff mm-hmm. from your current SQL Server to SQL Azure. But it actually takes just like a few minutes and you're done, and change your connection string to point into the cloud, and you're done, and you have regular backups and everything set up. So it's also interesting for people who have like small shops or something to do.
Cool.
It's very interesting, yeah.
Very cool. And you get a pick of the week?
Yeah, my pick of the week is MonoTouch .NET development kit for the iPhone. The reason I picked this is because in my current project I work with Mono a lot, so I keep on top of what they're doing, basically. And although I use it to run .NET code on Linux clusters, which is sort of the opposite end of the spectrum here, this is still very interesting, because if you want to develop apps for the iPhone at the moment, basically what you have to do is learn Objective-C, and not a lot of people know that. And you might have this huge investment in existing applications on Windows Mobile or something that you want to easily port to the iPhone.
Sure.
And with this you can just use your .NET code and run it on the iPhone. It compiles down to native code. And the really cool thing is that it's not just, you know, WinForms or something on top of the iPhone. They actually give you access to the native UI widgets of the iPhone. So you can really have an iPhone application that looks and feels like an iPhone application, but write it in .NET.
So who is this from? Is this from Novell? Is this from Apple? Who is backing this, actually?
It's from Novell.
Novell.
So I think it's now it's officially supported by Apple as well, so it's no longer rogue like it was before.
Right. So, but, you know, if you want to learn, if you're a .NET developer and have to build an iPhone app, you at least can stay in...
In the pretty of C#.
Yeah, right. In the beauty and not have to worry
That's
about
why Sven is like, he needs to develop on Linux, but he's still in C#, right?
Exactly.
Exactly.
The big thing, you can just use Visual Studio and then run it
everywhere,
on Linux.
Everywhere.
Just runs. Yeah.
So my pick of the week is notalwaysright.com. This was actually from a tweet that Scott Hanselman had. You got to go check out the site rather than trying to go through it, but you find stories like, for example, a woman that cut herself runs up to a lifeguard who asks her if she needs first aid. She says, no, I need you to get all the rocks out of the sea. She forces her to call her manager, says she's going to sue them, sue the government, etc. So it's always good to see, you know, sometimes the customer isn't always right.
Yes. When they think your CD drive is a cup holder.
Yeah.
That's the default tech support stories.
Yes. So definitely lots to laugh at here. And now it's on to Arvana White.
Let's go to the results here. As you can see, we have a total possible 12 points that you guys could have scored. And, you know, I know that you're all programmers and you've all drank a lot of cheap beer. So I would expect the numbers to be pretty high. But actually, as we added up here,
they're pretty low.
Oh, geez.
Nobody got beer A, which was Old English 800. Nobody got beer B, which was Foster's.
No.
Nobody got beer D, which was Mickey's. And only Dan scored a single point with beer C. So clearly, y'all have a lot of work to do this weekend. Good luck studying.
That's so hilarious. Cheers, guys.
On that note,
Cheers.
See you next week.
Thanks.
Oh, no.